Hey everyone, welcome in. We've got a great panel today.
Excited to dig into this one.
Same here. Some really fascinating stuff to unpack.
All right, let's jump right in. First up, we've got a piece on how MFA, multi-factor authentication, isn't always the silver bullet we think it is, especially in Windows environments. It's titled Where Multi-Factor Authentication Stops and Credential Abuse Starts.
Okay, so I thought MFA was supposed to stop attackers in their tracks? Like, isn't that the whole point?
That's the idea, right? But the article highlights some serious gaps, especially in how Windows environments handle authentication. Think about it. MFA is usually enforced through cloud identity providers like Okta or Azure AD. Works great for your cloud apps. But what about your actual Windows logons?
Exactly. The problem is that many Windows logins, especially on domain join systems, use Active Directory directly. And unless you've specifically implemented MFA within Active Directory, those logins bypass your cloud-based MFA entirely. It's a coverage problem.
So you're saying if an attacker steals my password, they can just log into my computer directly, even if I have MFA enabled for, say, my email?
Potentially, yes. If they get your password or even the NTLM hash, they can authenticate to the domain join machine without ever triggering that MFA prompt. The domain controller just sees a standard authentication request.
And it's not just interactive logons. The article mentions several other paths. RDP, Remote Desktop Protocol, is a big one. Direct RDP access often bypasses conditional access policies in the cloud. Then there's NTLM, an older authentication protocol, super vulnerable to pass the hash attacks, where the attacker uses the hash instead of the password.
Pass the hash is sneaky. MFA doesn't help if the system accepts the hash as proof of identity. And NTLM is still kicking around for compatibility reasons, which is a nightmare.
Okay, this is starting to sound like a huge vulnerability. What about Kerberos? I thought that was supposed to be more secure.
Kerberos is more secure, but it's not immune. Attackers can steal Kerberos tickets or forge them after compromising privileged accounts. That leads to pass the ticket, golden ticket, silver ticket attacks. Long-term access, lateral movement, all without needing to repeatedly log in and raise suspicion.
And those Kerberos attacks can persist even after password resets if you don't clean up the underlying compromise. Then you've got the classic problem of local admin accounts. Reused passwords, no MFA, easy escalation.
Ugh, local admin accounts, every security person's least favorite thing.
They're a necessary evil sometimes, but they need to be managed very carefully. The article also mentions SMB, server message block, for file sharing. Attackers use that for lateral movement once they have credentials, and service accounts. These are used to run scheduled tasks and often have default passwords that never expire.
Service accounts are basically sitting ducks. Broad permissions, long lifetimes, and often impossible to protect with MFA because they're automated. It's why attackers target help desk credentials and endpoint admin access early on.
So, what can you even do about all this? It sounds like Windows authentication is just a minefield of vulnerabilities.
The article has some good suggestions. Stronger password policies are a must. Longer passphrases, no password reuse, blocking weak patterns, and continuously block compromised passwords. There are databases of billions of breached passwords out there. Check against them.
Yeah, credential theft is rampant. You can't assume your users are picking unique, secure passwords. Proactive checks are essential. Also, reduce exposure to those legacy protocols like NTLM. Understand where it exists, reduce it where possible, and tighten controls where you can't remove it entirely.
What about service accounts? Any tips there?
Treat them like high-risk identities. Inventory them. Reduce unnecessary privileges, rotate credentials, and remove the ones you don't need. If a service account has domain-level permissions, assume it will be targeted.
The key takeaway here is that you can't just rely on cloud-based MFA and assume you're covered. You need to treat Windows authentication as its own security surface. It's a layered approach.
So MFA is still good, but it's not the whole story. Got it. What's next?
Next up, we've got a report on a new Russian cyber campaign targeting Ukraine. This one involves some new malware families called Badpaw and Meow Meow. Yes, really.
Meow Meow? Seriously? Is that what they're calling malware these days?
It's definitely a memorable name. This campaign has been attributed with moderate confidence to APT-28, a Russian state-sponsored threat actor. They're known for their sophisticated cyber operations.
APT-28, also known as Fancy Bear, has been around for a while. They're suspected of being tied to the GRU, Russian military intelligence. They've been linked to some high-profile attacks in the past, including meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election.
So this is serious business, then. What's the attack chain look like?
It starts with a phishing email, supposedly from a ukar.net address, trying to look legitimate. The email has a link to a zip archive. Once you extract it, there's an HTA file, which displays a decoy document written in Ukrainian, something about border crossing appeals.
Classic social engineering. Lure the victim in with something relevant to their situation. While the decoy document is displayed, the HTA file is busy deploying this badpaw loader in the background.
And what does badpaw do?
Badpaw connects to a remote server and downloads the Meow Meow backdoor. It's a two-stage process. The badpaw loader fetches the Meow Meow backdoor.
The article says the initial email even uses a tracking pixel, a tiny image, to see if the link was clicked. They're checking to see if they have a live one.
Sneaky, so they know if someone took the bait.
And the HTA file also does some anti-sandbox checks. It checks the Windows registry to see how old the system is. If it was installed less than 10 days ago, it aborts. They don't want to get caught in a sandbox environment.
That's a pretty common tactic. They're trying to avoid automated analysis.
Okay, so what does this Meow Meow backdoor actually do?
Meow Meow is designed to remotely execute PowerShell commands on the compromised host. It can also perform file system operations, read, write, delete data. Basic backdoor functionality.
The article mentions they found Russian language strings in the source code, which pretty strongly suggests Russian involvement. Although, you never know, it could be a false flag.
False flag? You mean like pretending to be Russian to throw people off?
It's possible, but it's more likely an operational security error. They forgot to remove the Russian language artifacts, or they just didn't care.
The geopolitical context here is important. Cyber attacks against Ukraine are a regular occurrence, especially given the ongoing conflict. This is just the latest example.
So, what's the takeaway here? Another sophisticated Russian cyber campaign targeting Ukraine. Anything new or particularly noteworthy about this one?
The use of these previously undocumented malware families, Badpaw and Meow Meow, is interesting. It shows they're still developing new tools and techniques. And the fact that they're using phishing emails from Unet to build trust is a clever tactic. It preys on people's trust in Ukrainian services.
Attribution in cyber attacks is always tricky, but the evidence here, the targeting, the geopolitical context, the overlaps with previous APT-28 operations, all point to Russian involvement. Let's move on to our third story, which is about fake Laravel packages.
Fake packages, like malicious software disguised as legitimate tools?
Exactly. These are PHP packages on Packagist, which is a popular repository for Laravel, a PHP framework. These packages are masquerading as Laravel utilities, but they're actually installing a cross-platform remote access Trojan, a RAT.
This is a supply chain attack, where attackers compromise the software development process to distribute malware. It's becoming increasingly common.
How does this even work? How do they get people to download these fake packages?
They give them plausible names, like Lara Helper or Simple Q. They might even publish some clean packages to build credibility.
Yeah, the article mentions that the threat actor published three clean libraries alongside the malicious ones, probably to make themselves look more legitimate. One of the malicious packages, Lara Swagger, doesn't even have malicious code itself. It just lists Lara Helper as a dependency, so it automatically installs the RAT.
That's sneaky. So you think you're just installing a Swagger utility, but you're actually getting a RAT.
Exactly. And the malicious code is heavily obfuscated to make it harder to detect. They're using tricks like control flow obfuscation, encoding domain names, and randomizing identifiers.
Once the payload is loaded, it connects to a command and control server, sends system information, and waits for commands. It gives the attacker full remote access to the host.
What kind of commands can they run?
The RAT supports a wide range of commands: ping, info, CMD, PowerShell, run, screenshot, download, upload, stop. They can run shell commands, PowerShell commands, capture the screen, read and write files, pretty much anything.
And it's designed to be resilient to common PHP hardening configurations. It probes disable functions and picks the first available method to execute shell commands.
So, if you've installed one of these packages, you're basically giving the attacker complete control of your server?
Pretty much. The article advises anyone who has installed these packages to assume compromise, remove them, rotate all secrets, and audit outbound traffic to the C2 server.
This is a reminder of the importance of verifying package integrity and using dependency scanning tools. Regularly update your dependencies and be very careful about what you're installing.
It's scary how easily attackers can inject malicious code into the software supply chain. What is Packagist doing to prevent this?
Packagist has security measures in place, but it's a constant cat and mouse game. They try to detect malicious packages, but attackers are always finding new ways to obfuscate their code and bypass the checks. It's a challenge.
The impact of a compromised package can be huge. Data theft, code injection, remote code execution, the possibilities are endless. It highlights the need for developers to be vigilant and proactive about security.
So to recap, MFA is good, but not a complete solution, especially in Windows environments. Russian threat actors are still actively targeting Ukraine with new malware, and the software supply chain is a vulnerable attack surface. Anything else we should cover?
I think that covers the main points. These three articles highlight some of the key security challenges we're facing today. The complexity of modern authentication, the ongoing threat from state-sponsored actors, and the increasing risk of supply chain attacks.
Agreed. It's a constantly evolving landscape, and we all need to stay informed and adapt our security measures accordingly. Thanks for the insights, both of you.